and text resist, and then they could stay in touch with what we're doing.
Finally, we covered the People Summit in Chicago last week, and 4,000 people came. Among those who addressed the crowd was Bernie Sanders. Is Bernie Sanders or you or other Congress members going to introduce a major single-payer bill around health care?
We already did. I mean, we just introduced a Medicaid for all, a Medicare for all. And we're moving forward on that. We believe in that idea. And you'll remember John Conyers introduced H.R. 676 years ago. We believe in single payer. While we're going to fight to protect and defend the Affordable Care Act, because the Affordable Care Act is in advance on where we were before, our sights are set higher. We aspire to, a system where everybody's covered and everybody can go to the doctor. And that's what I believe the United States should have. We should join the rest of the world and cover all of our people.
Congressman Ellison, I want to thank you for being with us. Co-chair of the House Progressive Caucus, first Muslim member of Congress, yep. Deputy chair of the Democratic National Committee. That does it for our show. Our website's democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 5 o'clock. Coming up next is your KBOO Evening News.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Friends of Noise Fest, a daytime music festival Sunday, June 25th at 4 p.m. at Disjecta in Portland. Friends of Noise Fest features 9 bands, including Waterfronts, Glacier Veins, Huone, Shortline, After Hours, and more. There's also going to be food, art, and an opportunity to learn more about Friends of Noise and their mission to support all-ages music spaces in Portland. Again, that's Friends of Noise Fest, Sunday, June 25th at 4 p.m. at Disjecta, 8371 North Interstate Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Open Source Bridge Conference, June 20th to 23rd at the Elliott Center in Portland. Open Source Bridge is a conference for developers working with open source technologies and for people interested in learning the open source way. The conference has 5 tracks connecting people across projects, languages, and backgrounds to explore open source. Again, that's the Open Source Bridge Conference, June 20th to 23rd at the Elliott Center, 1226 Southwest Salmon Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Oregon has become the first state in the nation to add a third gender to its driver's licenses and state-issued IDs.
Or not.
The Oregon House has passed a $550 million... The Oregon House has passed a $550 million tax to help fund the Oregon Health Plan.
And the White House.
And the White House announced the temporary continuation of the Dreamers program, even as it pulls the rug out from under their parents and other undocumented immigrants. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, June 16th, 2017. I'm Ruben Lawrence.
And I'm Zelos Marchant. On Thursday, the Oregon House of Representatives passed a $550 million package of new taxes on hospitals, health insurance companies, and coordinated care organizers. The revenue is necessary to prevent cuts to the Oregon Health Plan, the state's Medicaid program, which provides health insurance for nearly 400,000 Oregonians. Starting this year, the Affordable Care Act requires that states cover 5% of the cost of Medicaid. Despite strong support from the healthcare industry, the measure barely passed by a vote of 36 to 23, the minimum necessary to pass a tax increase. All Democrats voted yes. Republican Saul Esquivel of Medford provided the lone Republican vote. The bill now moves to the Senate, where it has stronger Republican support. Oregon is facing a $1.4 million budget shortfall, and the health provider bill was the first major tax bill to actually make it to a floor vote this session.
Earlier today, federal prosecutors announced that they have discontinued their investigation into former Oregon Governor John Kitzhaber and his partner Sylvia Hayes. Then-Governor Kitzhaber resigned from office in 2015 when Hayes came under suspicion of influence peddling and tax evasion. Hayes was reported to have received more than $200,000 from outside groups to influence energy and environmental policy within the administration. She failed to report the income on her tax returns. In a lengthy resignation letter, Kitzhaber said, quote, "I am confident that I have not broken any laws nor taken any actions that were dishonest or dishonorable in their intent or outcome," end quote. He also urged the State Ethics Commission and the Oregon Attorney General to take a close look at his actions. In a statement today, the U.S. Attorney's Office said that the investigation had concluded and, quote, "no federal criminal charges will be sought. The United States will not comment further on this matter," end quote. Oregon Attorney General Ellen Rosenblum has also said that she has no interest into looking into the matter. Kitzhaber was the longest-serving governor in Oregon history and was beginning his fourth term when he resigned on February 18, 2015.
Oregon has become the first state in the U.S. to add a third gender to its driver's license. State residents can now legally identify themselves as non-binary on ID cards. The new rules were passed by the State Transportation Commission yesterday and will go into effect on July 3rd. Once that happens, Oregon residents will have the option to choose among three gender categories when applying for driver's license or state ID cards: male, female, and X for agender or unspecified. In July of last year, Oregon Judge Amy Holmes Hun granted Portland resident Jamie Sharp non-binary gender status. In March of this year, Judge Hun granted Patch, a local video game designer, the legal right to be referred to by the term, quote, agender, end quote. And at that time, Judge Hine said that, quote, "I made these decisions like all decisions because they were supported by facts and law and out of respect for the dignity of the people who came before me," end quote. Those rulings caused the Oregon Department of Motor Vehicles and other state agencies to develop a third gender designation on identity documents. The International Civil Aviation Organization develops the global standards for passports and has included a recommendation for an X-gender field since 1996. Currently, Australia and New Zealand have that option on their passports.
The Portland police have seen an increase in the report of hate and bias crimes for the year so far. 9 hate crimes were reported in Portland through April of this year, compared to 10 reports of bias crimes for all of 2016. This is not the first time the uptick in hate crimes and harassment has been identified. In last week's edition of Street Roots, Leisha Brooks of the Southern Poverty Law Center noted that a disproportionately high number of hate crimes were being reported in Oregon compared to our West Coast neighbors. And last week, organizers of the Good in the Hood Festival reported receiving an anonymous letter that threatened to kill all the African-American attendees. As a result, the police plan a heightened presence at the festival, which runs from June 23rd through the 25th. The Bureau also announced that officers will be providing an enhanced presence at events in conjunction with Portland Pride Week, and they urge residents to immediately call 911 if they have been the victim of a hate crime or have witnessed one.
This weekend is the Portland Pride Waterfront Festival and Parade, one of the largest LGBTQ cultural celebrations on the West Coast. The festival will be held at Tom McCall Waterfront Park. Exhibitor booths are open from noon until 8 p.m. on Saturday and 11:30 a.m. until 6 p.m. Sunday. Both days feature an extensive lineup of entertainers on the main stage. Admission is $7 donation, but event organizers point out that they do not turn away anyone for their inability to pay. Sunday features the Pride Parade. Staging takes place in the North Park blocks, with the parade kicking off at 11 a.m. as the procession moves onto the West Burnside Avenue. The parade route will take participants through Old Chinatown on Northwest Davis Street before turning onto NATO Parkway and heading for Tom McCall Park. More information can be found on the web at pridenorthwest.org.
Girl.
Girl. The Portland Pride Festival takes place this weekend at Waterfront Park, with parades happening Saturday and Sunday. Many different communities and their allies will be hosting celebrations around the Portland metro area and coast to coast, taking time to remember and express what Pride means to them. KBOO's Zelos Marchant takes us into a brief history of the LGBTQIA movement and Pride.
One can speculate the roots of Pride go back as far as humanity does. In every culture, in every part of the world, you will find an ancient history presenting the LGBTQIA experience. There's the Okule and Agule in Africa, the Makanathon in the Middle East, the Basaja in Indonesia, the Hijra in India, and the Two Spirits in American Indian communities. As the Western world rolled into the 12th century, Thomas of Aquinas introduced theories that undermined the relevance of LGBTQIA people in history. By the 20th century, it was illegal for LGBTQIA people to meet in public. In 1969, bars in America catering to the LGBTQ experience and community provided spaces that were slightly more safe than being in plain sight, but were constantly targeted by law enforcement. Homosexuality was classified as a mental disorder after having been formally listed as such in the American Psychologists Association's very first Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders 1. In 1952. During the 1950s and 60s, many therapists used aversion therapy, and some still do, to cure people of their queerness, transness, and gay natures, with forms of torture like electric shock, drugs that made them vomit, and inappropriate practices like prearranged dates with young nurses working in the aversion hospitals. Later, homosexuality itself was voted to be removed from the DSM-2 in 1973 by an APA vote of 5,854 to 3,810 to retain it. But the victory was short-lived, as the APA quickly compromised by replacing the definition with sexual orientation disturbance. It wasn't until 1987 that homosexuality was completely removed from the DSM. For trans people, it's only fairly recently, in 2012, that the DSM reflected a change in its fifth edition from a definition of severe mental illness that included the term, quote, gender identity disorder, end quote, to one that no longer listed transgender and gender nonconforming people as mentally ill, and went as far as describing the distressing phenomenon of gender conflicting with assigned sex as gender dysphoria. The change opened up discriminatory channels for some, claiming that trans people were unfit parents or employees, and yet it paved the way for more access to insurance coverage and healthcare, since now the treatment was deemed medical and not cosmetic. Back at the Stonewall Inn in 1969 in NYC, a riot broke out on June 28th when police attempted to empty the LGBTQIA bar. The patrons fought back, sparking 3 days of protests that launched what we think of today as the modern-day LGBTQIA civil rights movement. These types of rights were happening coast to coast and around the world, and people began fighting back for their human right and civil right to love, live, eat, have access to healthcare, and to maintain an income. Sylvia Rivera, a bisexual transgender woman of Puerto Rican and Venezuelan descent, and Marsha P. Johnson, a black transgender woman, are credited with being at the front of the Stonewall conflict. Unfortunately, Rivera was soon pushed out of the gay movement for her strong attempts to rally support for transgender rights, sex workers, and queer people who were incarcerated. Many have forgotten that it was bisexual, transgender women of color who helped rally a nation and liberate a people, and that it was communities of color working overtime with their neighbors, friends, and loved ones to make it possible for all LGBTQIA people to live a better life proudly. A month after the riots, bisexual Brenda Howard organized a Liberation Day march on Christopher Street that a year later turned into the annual National Pride Parade. As a non-binary trans person of color, I'm proud of my community, our pizzazz, and how every single person expresses pride uniquely their own way. I'm proud of the way that we consistently and continually attempt to break down toxicity and oppression, how we work to restore our traditions and make new ones, and best of all, the way that we love our way every day, proudly. Happy Pride. Are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for Counterspin at 5:30, followed by Bread and Roses at 6. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow, we can expect a cloudy day in Portland with temperatures in the mid-70s. East of the Cascades and Hood River, you can look forward to a mix of clouds and sun with similar temperatures. On this date, in 1829, Goya Cla, the one who yawns, was born in Sonora, Mexico. He went on to become famous as Geronimo, the leader of the Chiricahua Apache tribe. In his 60s, he and a band of less than 50 managed to elude a combined army of 8,000 U.S. and Mexican troops for over 5 months. When he finally gave up in 1886, he was the last Native American leader to formally surrender to the U.S. Army. He spent his last 23 years as a prisoner of war. The quote of the day is from Geronimo, who said, quote, "I was no chief and never had been, but because I had been more deeply wronged than others, this honor was conferred upon me, and I resolved to prove worthy of the trust," end quote.
In a rare show of congressional unity, the annual charity baseball game between Republicans and Democrats came off as planned last night at Washington's National Park. The game was played despite Wednesday's early morning shooting during the Republican practice session. 4 people were wounded in the attack, including 2 Capitol Police officers and Senate Majority Whip Steve Scalise, Republican of Louisiana. Scalise remains hospitalized in critical condition after being shot in the hip. The shooter, James Hodgkinson of Belleville, Illinois, died in a shootout with the police. The congressional baseball game was first played in 1909. Last year, the event raised over $500,000 for charity, and last night's game sold a record 25,000 tickets, more than were sold at some of the day's major league games. The Democrats won the game 11-2, but in the post-game ceremony, they presented the trophy to the Republicans to place in Representative Scalise's office.
The Trump administration announced yesterday that it will not eliminate protections provided under the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. The DACA program, sometimes referred to as DREAMers, allowed undocumented immigrants who came to the United States as small children to register with immigration and remain in the U.S. The program promised participants that they would not be deported and would be issued work permits as long as they were registered and renewed every 2 years. But in a clarification this morning, officials said that yesterday's statements were simply intended to show that DACA would not be affected by a separate action that effectively ends any chance of a similar program for adults. On Thursday, Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly revoked DAPA, or Deferred Action for Parents of Americans and Lawful Permanent Residents. Estimates are that upwards of 4 million undocumented immigrants would have benefited from DAPA. After the White House clarified their position, immigration lawyer David Leopold said in a statement that, quote, "It's no surprise that Trump would quickly walk back the preservation of DACA," end quote. He added that the administration was trying to, quote, "cynically pit 800,000 dreamers against the rest of the 11 million undocumented immigrants," end quote.
On today's edition of Labor History in 2 Minutes, Rick Smith reminds us that on this date in 1918, socialist Eugene V. Debs gave the famous anti-war speech, which led to his conviction under the Espionage Act.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1918. That was the day Eugene V. Debs, leader of the Socialist Party, gave his legendary anti-war speech in Canton, Ohio. The speech, for which he would eventually be arrested, tried, and convicted under the Espionage Act. Though he avoided explicitly criticizing World War I or President Wilson, he made clear his views. He gave the speech at a park near the jail where Charles Baker, Charles Rutenberg, and Alfred Wegenecht, three prominent socialists, were being held on Espionage Act-related charges. Debs noted, quote, "It is extremely dangerous to exercise the constitutional right of free speech in a country fighting to make democracy safe in the world." Debs was defiant. He unloaded his rage against the judicial system and the conviction of socialist leader Kate Richards O'Hare for her anti-war views. He railed against the suppression of Max Eastman's socialist press and the ongoing persecution of socialists Tom Mooney and William Billings. Debs briefly reviewed the history of wars in Europe and made the following observation, saying, quote, "The masterclass has always taught and trained you to believe it is your patriotic duty to go to war and to have yourselves slaughtered at their command. But in all the history of the world, you, the people, have never had a voice in declaring war. The working class who fight all the battles, the working class who make the supreme sacrifices, the working class who freely shed their blood and furnish the corpses have never yet had a voice in declaring war or making peace." For this, he was convicted of advocating disloyalty and draft resistance and sentenced to 10 years in prison. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2.
Earlier today, Donald Trump reversed many of the policies that former presidents had put in place to normalize relations with Cuba. Speaking in Miami's Little Havana neighborhood, Trump said, quote, "I am canceling the last administration's completely one-sided deal with Cuba," end quote. He went on to say that he would reinstitute the ban on tourism and continue to enforce a trade embargo. He also said that he would reinstate the U.S. ban on commercial relations between the two countries and end any economic deals with the Cuban government. Throughout the campaign, Trump had promised to roll back the relationship with Cuba, and today's speech was seen as the fulfillment of a campaign promise he made to the large population of Cuban refugees in Florida. However, critics were quick to point out that the reduction in tourism and U.S. investment will probably hurt the small business owners and entrepreneurs in the island nation the most. Cynics also pointed out that the rule change will prevent American hotel companies that compete with the Trump brand from getting a head start.
Bernie Sanders may be the only American politician to have congratulated Jeremy Corbyn on the Labour Party's stunning comeback in last week's British election. The Vermont senator shares Corbyn's opposition to economic inequality, but departs from Labour Party leaders' anti-war foreign policy. Pacifica's Anne Garrison has this report.
There are no headlines reporting that House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi or Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer or any other Democrats besides Bernie Sanders have called to congratulate Jeremy Corbyn on the Labour Party's surprise comeback to win 40.3% of the seats in Britain's parliament. Bernie Sanders said that he stayed up well into the morning hours to cheer the results. Sanders expressed his support for Corbyn on June 1st, a week before the election, at the Brighton Festival in England.
"And I'm also impressed by his willingness to talk about class issues. So many people run away from the grotesque levels of income and wealth inequality that exist in the United States, that exist in the UK, and exist all over the world. And I believe we will never make the kinds of changes that we need unless we take on this issue of income and wealth inequality and create an economy that works for all of us."
Last year, speaking to David Axelrod, the chief strategist for Barack Obama's presidential campaigns, President Obama said that he did not fear the, quote, "Corbynization," unquote, of the Democratic Party, and that even Bernie Sanders is a political centrist compared to Jeremy Corbyn. Corbyn is indeed to the left of Sanders on foreign policy. 4 days after the May 24th terror attacks in Britain, he said that there is a cause and effect relationship between, quote, wars are government supported and fought in other countries, and terrorism here at home, unquote. He also said that Britain's participation in the overthrow of the Libyan government might be among the causes. He has also said that Osama bin Laden should have been put on trial and that proof of his death should be produced. After the alleged April 4th sarin gas attacks in Syria, Corbyn called for the suspension of British airstrikes until the UN could investigate evidence at the site and negotiate from that investigation.
There has to be a reconvening quickly of the Geneva process, Geneva conference. I would say to President Trump, listen, it's in nobody's interest for this war to continue. Let's get the Geneva process going quickly. And in the meantime, no more strikes. Have a UN investigation into the war crime of the use of chemical weapons in Syria and take it on from there.
In a statement on Trump's missile strikes on Syria, Bernie Sanders concurred with U.S. policymakers and corporate press that Syria was responsible for the sarin gas attacks. He objected only that Trump had acted without congressional authorization. In Berkeley, for Pacifica, KPFA Radio, I'm Ann Garrison.
And now we hear the latest in worker-related news from our friends at LaborRadio.org.
Workers Independent News Week in Review.
For Win, I'm Joanne Powers. On Monday afternoon, the AFL-CIO revealed an extensive set of formal recommendations for a major renegotiation of the North American Free Trade Agreement. Communication Workers of America President Chris Shelton says the AFL-CIO framework will benefit working people, create jobs, and raise wages throughout North America.
If the NAFTA renegotiation is another secretive, corporate-driven process that provides huge assistance to multinational corporations, but just crumbs to working people, that will not solve any of the problems that American workers face. So we are laying out an agenda today that does solve these problems.
Well, 1,200 nurses at Tufts Medical Center in Boston are back at the bargaining table this week after voting overwhelmingly to reject the hospital's last best and final offer on Thursday. The Massachusetts Nurses Association are continuing to mobilize and prepare for a possible strike. Barbara Tiller, co-chair of the Nurses Bargaining Committee, says the option is still on the table.
We don't feel that the offer that's on the table right now is enough to help us to build a strong, clinically sound nursing staff. It was an overwhelming no vote. So we feel very confident that we could easily pull the strike notice and go out if that's what we need to do.
A new report shows that construction workers building World Cup facilities in Russia face exploitation and labor abuses, while the Worldwide Football Association, FIFA, has promised to address labor and human rights concerns after reports that immigrant workers building for the 2022 World Cup in Qatar labor in near-slavery conditions. The report says that, so far, they are coming up short in Russia as well. Workers involved in World Cup construction sites face month-long pay delays and work in sub-zero temperatures without proper protections. Jane Buchanan, an associate director at Human Rights Watch, authored the report.
FIFA obviously has the responsibility and the authority to ensure that World Cups aren't built on exploitation and on the back of abused workers. It'll be a real stain on this World Cup if that's part of this legacy.
On Tuesday, President Donald Trump visited the Waukesha County Technical College in Wisconsin, along with State Governor Scott Walker, in order to promote the state's century-old apprenticeship system as a solution to a looming shortage of skilled workers. Michael Rosen, recently retired president of American Federation of Teachers Local 212 in Milwaukee, says that the visit is sheer hypocrisy, considering that Trump and Walker have both promoted massive funding cuts for job training and technical colleges.
It has been an avenue into the blue-collar middle class for literally tens and tens of thousands of people. If President Trump and Governor Walker are serious about increasing apprenticeship training, they should put money into it. That is hypocritical. They're saying one thing while they actually are cutting the funding.
Workers Independent News provided by Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Today's report from Climate Connections looks at how parents view the impact of climate change on the future welfare of their children.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. John Friedrich's career has always focused on social justice and environmental issues. But after the birth of his daughter, he became even more committed.
Becoming a dad really deepened my connection at a personal, heartfelt level to do everything I could to make the world a better, more peaceful, livable place for my new daughter.
Friedrich believes parents are motivated in a way no one else is.
Ultimately, parents are woven throughout society. They're not of one demographic, and there's nothing quite as powerful as the passion of a parent demanding that the decision makers do what's in the best interest of our kids right now and in their future. If you could catalyze that feeling of love in the heart of parents and multiply that by parents everywhere, I just thought, wow, what a powerful force.
Now, Friedrich is the online campaign manager for the Sierra Club's Climate Parents Program. The group helps families support climate solutions. For example, Friedrich says parents can help make sure their kids are being taught climate science and encourage school districts to use clean energy.
I just think it's our responsibility as parents to do everything we can to leave the world in a better condition for our kids.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-driven produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories. If you covered a local event and have audio or video that you want to share with the KBOO audience, we want to hear from you. Call us at 503-231-8032 or contact the Evening News Director via email at newsdirector@kboo.org. The producer for tonight's newscast is Ray Bodwell. Our engineer is Jenna Yokoyama. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is myself, Celis Marchand. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Celis Marchand.
I'm Ruben Lawrence. Coming up Monday morning on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, it's More Talk Radio with Cecil and Celeste. Organizers from Good in the Hood will talk about the community celebration now in its 25th year. At 9, the Old Mole Variety Hour burrows down to the roots of the great issues of our time and goes where corporate media fears to tread. At 10, Eric S.